Good morning, wonderful listeners. You've tuned into Post Session Podcast, a podcast filled with the stoke of a surf session and the wise guidance of an ocean voyager. Your water-loving hosts are ready to share this infectious state of mind while encouraging and inspiring you for your next adventure.
Hey, listeners, we are doing an extra episode of Post Session Podcast due to the coronavirus. I am recording from Wilmington, North Carolina, and Ashley is recording from Belize. Hey, Ash, I miss you and your family. How is it there? Does Belize have any active cases of coronavirus?
No, actually, but I need to throw out a disclaimer before we get going, okay?
Okay.
This is the first time that Laurel and I have attempted to record remotely. So this could turn out really great and interesting, or the sound quality could be terrible. I don't know yet. I'm going to try not to hit the table, and hopefully there's not too much background noise going on around here. I need to paint a picture for you. So I had to dinghy in this morning. I went to the fisherman's dock. I had to walk up the street to a restaurant that's closed, but that has good internet. And I'm sitting here all by myself, surrounded by palm trees under a big, huge palapa.
What's a palapa?
Palapa is a big, thatched roof.
Tiki hut.
Yeah, it's like what people would think when they think of a tiki hut. You use all these palms to make the roof. And it's actually pretty fantastic construction. And the roofs hold up for much longer than you'd think. It's nature's roofing.
That sounds good. I'm sitting outside on our back deck. And so if you hear chickens in the background or geese overhead, that is why.
Okay, so if you want, I can get going on what's happening in Belize right now. Do you want me to give you a little report?
Yeah.
Or are we jumping the gun?
No, go ahead. What's happening in Belize? Do y'all have any active coronavirus?
There's still no active cases of coronavirus. The only thing they're even talking about is some guy that went home to the States and was symptomatic after he had traveled to Belize, but that is it. There's nothing that they're talking about. I will also say this. I need to give the Belizean government a little bit of credit here because they're being super proactive to try to stop the spread. Well, I mean, they've closed down Belize City, the big international airport there. So nothing's going in and nothing's going out right now as far as commercial flights. That's it. Even with zero reported cases, they've closed the airport. They've taken the kids out of schools. They've even, like Ren and I on the boat, we can tune into regular FM radio. So we listen to this local station at night, and they're giving people all kinds of public service announcements, such as at the grocery store, you need to pre-bag all of the vegetables so that it minimizes the amount of time that you are in contact with another person. That's the Belize accent.
Oh, right, I like there. It. Plus, that means, you know, if they had to touch every apple or every pear, that's that much more contact. I haven't heard that here.
I'm telling you, they're doing a real, really, really good job of trying to keep it squelched down. So I think, honestly, that my children and Ren and I are in a pretty nice situation right now.
Absolutely, especially if there's no contact or, you know, known cases of coronavirus there. I mean, if you come here, you're not going to be able to get out and do what you're doing now, like be in the water and you know, go into town and everything be open. You know, I mean, we have things open here, but the schools are closed just like there. But really only, I mean, we'll get into this later, but just a lot of things are closed. We'll just say that.
Well, here I would say people are social distancing. But it's not so severe. Like you said, we can still get out and we can swim and dive. And we went to the beach and played the other day. But to be honest, we profile. I mean, if you see anybody that looks like a tourist, you don't go hang out with them, you know, because it's the Americans and Canadians and Europeans right now that are most at risk.
Infectious.
Mm-hmm, infectious. But today was the very last international flight. So if you are visiting and you didn't get on the flight this morning, you're either stuck in Belize for a month. So almost everybody left. And because this is the high season.
Unless you're on a boat, right?
Well, yeah, if you're on a boat, you do whatever the heck you want. But if we're in a place called Key Cocker, and if you right now is the high season for them, the tourist season, and a bunch of the locals have gone home too. The people that come over just to work the high season, they've gone back to the mainland and everything. Wow. So it's turning into a little ghost town, which is kind of cool.
A little nice, huh? If you're there enjoying all the warm weather, warm water.
Unfortunate circumstances, but we kind of got the island to ourselves a little bit.
Wow. Well, let's, should we move into some, well, maybe let's go to the table of contents. Today, we're going to go through some post-session notes, what happened in the water this week or last week. And then we're going to head into the injustice of the week.
Yeah.
Then we're going to dive a little deeper, and then we're going to drift into some God waters and bring it on home with some homework.
Okay, cool. I'm really excited. We're doing a special edition. This is cool.
Yeah, and it's cool that we're remotely recording, so that's pretty fun.
On location.
Okay. On location.
Well, you get us started with the post-session notes as usual.
All right. Well, last week we didn't have fantastic waves. They were small to middling, but there was a little wave out there almost all week. And I went out every morning, and then Friday morning I was kind of like just tired, and I was thinking, you know, I think I'll just watch the news and not go out. The waves looked meh. But I need to say a big, huge, fat thank you to my surf buds like Kristen and Theo Tony, who in spite of looking at the waves last Friday and feeling a big fat meh, they went out to surf anyway. So like every surfer who lives with FOMOs, not FOMO, FOMOs, fear of missing out on surf, knowing that if I did not go, I would be subject to their bragging about how great it was. So, of course, I dragged my sorry butt out of bed, turned off the news, and grabbed my wetsuit and headed out the door. Little did we know, Ash, that later that day, the officials closed the beaches.
Well, you know, I couldn't imagine if you missed out, because I feel like that might be one of your greatest fears in life is missing out, just in general.
To be honest, the quarantines and the social distancing, I didn't even care until they closed the beaches.
So what are you going to do, Laurel? How long are they closed for?
It's indefinite. I mean, right now they're saying, you know, April 1st, but we know that's not going to happen. They're not going to change in a week when, you know, they're just now ramping up the tests. So all these tests are coming back positive. I mean, I'm sure the cases were already there, but they're getting all these tests in, and then they're getting all the test results. So of course the numbers are going up. So there's no way April 1st or April anything, they're probably going to say the beaches are open, which,
right.
You know what? I'm not going to say anything else about it, because we'll get to that in the injustice of the week.
Okay. So we'll put a little pause right there, but you got to catch the last surf. So, hey.
Yes.
That's good.
So how about you? What you guys been doing in the water this week?
Well, to tell you the truth, actually, since we landed in Guatemala, it has been honking. The wind has been ridiculously strong. And actually, it's pretty typical, the wind direction and all of that for this time of year. It's just that we're in the Western Caribbean, so it's very hard to move around in that kind of wind because it's hard east blowing you into the land. That being said, we did get to dive here and there with some tarpon and those kinds of things. And tomorrow or Wednesday, which I guess when people hear this, it'll really be today or Wednesday. We will be headed out to some of the out islands because, you know, Belize has the second largest reef in the world next to the Great Barrier Reef. And it's, you know, just fantastic. So Ani's been begging to dive the coral reef. So we're going to take a few days off and just go play. There's nothing else to do, you know?
Right.
Let's see. Oh, and Kate.
So did the wind mess up the diving?
No, the wind is predictable. It's just been so strong that we couldn't really move Jade around so much. But it's about to lighten in the next few days. And so we're going to take advantage of the lighter wind and put everything else on pause and, you know, go dive the coral reef, go out to some islands and just live for a week or so out in the islands. You know, they get the big blue hole here, so we'll check that out. Ren's been working for a guy since we've been here, so he's gonna just put his work on hold for a bit and we'll go play. But also,
ooh, that sounds nice.
I wanted to say this because this is kind of a big deal, but Kate broke his arm.
Oh, girl, I saw pictures. Bless his little heart.
Our little 2-year-old precious little boy broke his arm, and it was not rough. We were at anchor. The problem was he was on the top of the companionway stairs, which are the kind of steep stairs that go down into the hull of the boat.
And yeah, I've seen him.
He loves his blankies, and he has about 8 blankies on board. They're all exactly the same, just with different patterns. And he was carrying 3 or 4 of them in both arms. And we've told him, you know, don't carry things when you're walking down the stairs. Don't carry things. But this time he just fell. He fell and he got one of these, what they call a green stick break.
What does that mean, by the way?
Well, if you can imagine the way that a green stick looks when you break it, it doesn't break clean all the way through. It doesn't snap, you know, like a brown stick.
God.
Oh. Yeah, but it's better because it's still attached and it only bent on one side. It didn't break all the way through. So I don't know. I feel like somehow is better. And he's 2, which means he's going to heal extraordinarily fast compared to an adult, like at least twice as fast as an adult would heal.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so we're on week 2 with the cast, and it's already gotten wet, and we can't get a dry bag in. We got a friend back home that sent us a couple dry bags, but they're in purgatory somewhere. I don't know, and so I don't know. I'm not sure how we're gonna manage keeping him dry for all that time.
Oh yeah, that's gonna stink later.
Yeah, I know. We're just it's not like we have a hair dryer. Hold on, there's a golf cart going by. It's not like we have a hair dryer to dry it out. We're just trying to put a little baking soda in there and stuff like that to absorb some moisture.
Can you buy a hair dryer? Can you buy a hair dryer like at one of the stores?
Probably, but we'd have to plug it into the generator every time we need to run it, because anything with a heating element, it just draws a lot of power. But the wind is honking here and the sun is out, so it should dry out nicely. We just got to keep our eyes on it. You know, I mean, I hate to say this out loud to everybody because everyone's going to cringe and my mom's going to freak out and call me and yell at me, but Ren wants to cut it off. And, you know, Jay Bennett from our church,
he's an orthopedic.
Right. So he's an orthopedic. Knows. When Kate broke his arm, Ren called him immediately just to make sure, because some guy told us not to go to the Dangriga hospital, blah, blah, blah. It's so terrible. But we went there anyway because it's the closest one. And anyway, so Ren called Jay just to get the rundown, and they casted Kate's arm right away. And Jay said, well, normally you wait a couple days for swelling before you cast it. So if it starts to swell, you can cut it off in a way that you can put it back on after the swelling subsides. Well, Ren interpreted that as, well, shoot, I can cut that sucker off and we can just take it on and off every day. So he's really pushing me he wants to cut it so that we can take it off and change the dressing in it when it gets wet and then put it back on.
But won't Kate try and take it off once he's able?
That's what I think. I mean, he's not a ding dong. And he doesn't love wearing that thing, so I think it's going to make life a lot harder. But anyway,
oh my gosh.
C'est la vie. Let's move on.
Are you ready to move on to the injustice of the week?
Yeah, because I don't want to take up too much time lamenting about poor baby Capy. Because life is pretty daggone good right now.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the injustice. What's the injustice?
Okay. Well, you have one thing down. I have something else.
Tell me yours.
Your thing?
Yours probably going to be better.
I don't know. Well, here's the thing. Wrightsville Beach, Carolina Beach, Surf City Beach are all closed.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that the day before, there were a lot of spring break kids, college students that are out of school. People were on the beach in the afternoon.
Wasn't that like a big deal in Florida? Didn't somebody, I don't know, we can't watch TV.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, definitely spring break down in Florida is huge. So they were packed. But, you know, for Wrightsville Beach, it was a beautiful day. It was 80 degrees. And, you know, people were out on the beach because it's a open air place. It's a salt water. It's, you know, a lot of positive things about the beach. Mm-hmm. And probably some young people were not social distancing. It seems to me that they could.
Mm-hmm. They're doing the opposite, you know.
Yeah, well, they're probably doing the opposite wherever they are. So, but on the beach, it was, you know, obvious to many that, you know, they were putting each other at risk, I imagine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had gone out at crack of dawn with my surf buds that, you know, I didn't even park next to Kristen. I parked in the parking space, you know, the next one over. So to keep our distance. And even though I know she doesn't have it, none of us have symptoms, but we're still keeping our distance. I'm not walking side by side out to the water, you know, with maybe a few feet between us. And then when you're in the water, you've got plenty of room, plenty of room. And here's something healthy that you can do. Being on the beach is healthy. Taking walks on the beach is healthy. I mean, it's a damn shame is what it is.
Yeah. And you know what? That virus can't live in salt water. So it's probably the best place to be is just hanging around in the salt water.
But yeah, I don't know. So to me, that's a bit of an injustice. I wish they could have said, we're limiting the hours instead of having the time when most people are out. What about from 11 o'clock to 4 o'clock? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about that?
Yeah.
And then so you have your early morning and your evenings that you can walk on the beach or you can, you know, it's not like the water is warm enough to be swimming. So, I mean, if you're out in the water, you're usually in a wetsuit, you're surfing.
Yeah. Plus, people can still, it's not like they've shut down Wilmington. I mean, people can still go to the store and do all those things. So to completely shut down the beach doesn't make much sense because people just congregate somewhere else anyway. A curfew seems like a more reasonable way to do things so that you can keep everybody happy, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe they just don't understand how much of that surf and medicine you need to take per week. They don't get that your dose has been restricted.
and it's a vital for living dose.
Right. Well, I'm sorry. I mean,
I actually posted on probably post-session Instagram that, you know, goodbye beaches, you know, I understand you, it will be missed. But then, you know, one of my surf buddies said, I don't understand. And really, I don't either. I mean, I want to be conscientious of every, you know, especially our most vulnerable people. But I don't know. Anyway, yeah,
my grandmothers are not surfing at the beach, so we don't have to worry about.
Exactly. Anything else you want to bring up for the injustice of the week?
Well, I'll bring up my injustice, which I'm not sure if it's an injustice. That's why I'm really looking for some clarity from you, because you're, you know, boots on the ground over there in the United States. And I feel like my injustice kind of seamlessly will work us into our dive deeper into the meat of the conversation. But is the media blowing this thing out of proportion? I don't know. I know that here I'm listening to the radio news. Everybody's taking precautions. It's good. Everyone knows the lingo, social distancing. We're talking about it with people, but, I also know that back home they have the recommended quarantine and people are watching the news all day long. And I'm just wondering if it is making something out of this that it's not. How bad is it really?
I don't know. I mean, I think people are getting a bead on that now because there's more testing happening. So the numbers are going up. And I'm all for social distancing. I'm okay with that. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel for the businesses and, you know, the economic loss that's happening around the globe. But what I don't like I don't mind being cautioned. And yes, 24/7, but this politicizing, like depending on which news source you're listening to, when I hear a bias, I turn it off. I'm tired of hearing the obvious biases. That is not your job in a time of crisis.
Go ahead, tell me what biases
I guess it's just like the normal. It's the norm. You know, you can turn to Fox. You're going to hear a bias, you know, for conservative. If you're on the Today Show, it's a liberal bias. But when they make obvious remarks about the other side, I just feel like that's a disservice to the American people. Really, I want you to focus on how we can work together, how we are working together, and how we are solving problems.
Using it as an opportunity to gain some momentum for a re-election or for the upcoming election or whatever.
Exactly. And it's obvious. It's like, it's not that it's not obvious. That's the thing. Like, it's, you know, when it seems obvious to me, I feel like, okay, now you've crossed over from doing your job to selling something. And if the journalism, you've got to not be selling something.
See, that's what I'm worried about right there. I'm worried about by politicizing it, if things don't just snowball out of proportion and we're getting the worst possible picture of this thing, just because that picture helps to paint somebody else in the corner, you know, like maybe Trump. Maybe he isn't doing enough to stop the virus, and that's the big thing. Or he created the virus himself, working with the Chinese, and this is just some crazy, you know. Or you know, Obama was in office; this could have been stopped, but it wasn't because he sucks, or whatever. I don't know. It's just really childish, in my opinion. But it's funny because I'm watching The Crown. We downloaded episodes of The Crown. Have you watched this?
I've never watched it.
Dude, I love it. It's not something I would normally choose, but Ren started watching it on recommendation, and I love it. And anyway, it reminds me of what's going on now, because in Wales, back in the 60s, I think, there was this really terrible disaster in a place called Aberfan, which is a mining town. And what happened was the Queen didn't visit in what the Labour Party at the time thought was an appropriate amount of time to visit. Mm-hmm. No, she didn't rush out there to visit, which it turns out, I guess she really, really regretted later. But anyway, they turned it into this whole political issue, like the government turned against her and this and that, instead of everybody coming together to save the people. They were all just trying to find a place to lay blame. And I'm feeling like that's probably happening back home, too.
Yeah, I definitely hear some of that. You know, I feel like locally, like listening to my own local news, I don't really get that.
Right. Well, I've been digging the Belize FM radio because they're just telling us some of the facts, you know, where the most cases are coming from, any kind of new news. But it hasn't been anything that makes me feel like I'm an immediate danger of losing my life. There's nothing really fantastic. Then again, there's no reported cases yet. But they're also not trying to gloss that over. They're not like, oh, Belize has it all figured out because there's no cases. They're saying it's a matter of time. It will come. These are the things we need to do. So I really appreciate just that straightforward kind of mentality. But
yes.
Anyway, my parents, I was on the phone with them the other day, and they told me about this situation in New Jersey. I'm sure you've heard it. I'm sure it's all over the news, but there's like seven people in the family, and they went for Sunday dinner together, and four of them ended up dying, and three were in critical condition. Did you hear about this family?
Honestly, I didn't.
Well, it scared the crap out of me. When they were telling me this, I was so scared. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is, the zombies are coming, you know? But I'm wondering now if that was just such an outlying situation, and it's not what most people are experiencing. And
I'll tell you, I will say this. I think I like this, or at least I've I've saved it on my home screen on my phone. There's, it's called Worldometer.
Okay.
It's got all these statistics for every country. Then you can, not on every country you can't click on, but on the USA, on many of the bigger countries, you can click on it. And then it divides it into states. So you can see how many people have it, how many are active cases, how many new cases, how many deaths, how many new deaths. And so I felt like that put it in perspective. I mean, ours are, our numbers are growing, but in the grand scheme of things, of other flu viruses, you know, H1N1, just how many people died during that. I know that we are not to that place yet where they can say, have we dampened the curve yet? Because we were, you know, a few weeks out to see, you know, to hit that high point. So hopefully all the measures that we have undergone and the sacrifices we've made, the beach, nothing like the sacrifices people have made. I mean, they've called it the invisible war, but we are not making the kinds of sacrifices that the people have made in wars in the past. But we're making small sacrifices. And, you know, I feel like it's a good thing to make those. It's a, absolutely, it's a chance to reprioritize. But I think we're getting into diving a little deeper. We need to flush our, maybe we did already flush down the injustice of the week and we just naturally moved on through.
I feel like in this episode, the two are kind of, they blended. Ren, I don't know where you're going to put the little break in there, but maybe we won't have one this time.
The toilet flush.
Yeah.
Ash, why don't you talk to us a little bit as we move into the dive deeper.
Okay. Thanks for helping to bring some structure back to this whole thing. But I do have a question.
Okay.
I'm talking to mom and dad a lot about this thing and my brother too. And everybody's saying that there's no toilet paper. There's nothing in the grocery stores. The shelves are empty. And like you said earlier, they're calling it the invisible war, but we're not actually at war. So I'm wondering what the panic is. Do people think that they're going to be holed up in their house for a year? Or is it, what's the deal with
it? I think it is something that should have been in the injustice of the week, like the toilet paper hoarders. But I think it is kind of what you were talking about, the media and, you know, how we are able to, as, you know, what they would not have ever been able to do in the past, which is watch news 24/7, hear about things disappearing from the shelves, and other people panic like, oh my God, people are buying up toilet paper. I don't even know why, but I'm going to go buy toilet paper. And then there's no toilet paper. Like Charmin is running 24/7. Their lines of, you know, making the toilet paper. So, you know, never in the history of our existence has this happened. And I think that is a result of report, you know, like this couldn't have happened without the news media.
No. And it really, I don't want to downplay this whole situation, but it really makes me think everybody's full of poop.
Shit.
And this is a great analogy for the whole situation, running out of toilet paper, because of all the things that I'm going to take with me, if I really think that everything is going to hit the fan and I'm going to be, you know, isolated from everything. And it's not toilet paper. I mean, we can survive without toilet paper. You can use a rag, you can wring it out, you know, you can wash it up. It's just, I would just make sure that I had all the food that I could possibly take and tons of eggs and, you know, those things that are going to help keep me healthy. But I just don't understand this fascination with buying up all the toilet paper. You know, you run out of toilet paper, it happens. You use a washcloth and you rinse it out.
You can jump in the shower.
Jump in the shower.
Use the hose.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I don't get it. If somebody were to say, yeah, it's just, you know, this is breaking news where there's no rice on the shelves. I get that. People think, okay, rice doesn't go bad. I can eat it no matter what. I don't know. And I know one industry that's not suffering financially right now, and that's Charmin.
Yeah. Or any grocery store, really.
Yeah. All those grocery stores are thumping, aren't they?
Right. You almost want to put them in the category of, you know, people on the front lines. You know, the guy in, I was in Food Line, and the guy, he was actually a store manager, was scanning, you know, the empty shelves where the toilet paper. And I was like, hey, you know, what's your anticipation for this toilet paper crisis to level out? And he was like, I don't know. You know, he said it comes in and it's not 20 minutes. The guys can't even get it on the shelves. He said they were practically being attacked.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, wow. That must really like lower your expectations of humanity when you have something like that happening. I said, these poor guys, he was, you know, basically they were attacked and that people were shoving. And actually a person that I work with works at Sam's Club, and she had somebody shove her.
Oh my
gosh. She works there. Yeah.
And the thing is, these people, like the guy that's the store manager, you think, okay, he's intimately aware of the supply and demand of everything in that store. He's seen hurricanes come and go. You know, mm-hmm. he knows. But this has got to be unprecedented for him to look at you and say, I do not know.
I mean, it's funny, but it's not funny. What's sad is, you know, something like this can bring out the best in us and it can bring out the worst in us. And certainly fear, based in whether it's real or perceived, is not when the best of us comes out.
No, I just imagine lemmings being let off a cliff. That's what it feels like with everybody fighting over toilet paper in the store. It's just, it's nonsensical. Mm-hmm. But this brings up a great point when you said it, you could, you know, these things could bring out the best or the worst in us. Ren and mm-hmm. I, and I'm sure this happens with you and Don and everybody else out there, but you go through these highs and you go through these lows, right? The tide mm-hmm. ebbs and flows, the mm-hmm. all of that stuff. So financially, we have times where things are flush and feeling good and we're able to accomplish goals and do these things. And we have times when we're tight and mm-hmm. the tide has receded and we're standing on some dry land wondering when we can get our feet wet again. But in those times, even though it's scary and it's a total bummer, we actually really appreciate those moments, because when that happens, we get busy. We start generating work. We start getting a little more creative. We start branching out. We start adding children's swim courses instead of just freediving classes to our mm-hmm. To our repertoire. So I really feel like in this situation on the other side, people will get creative and they will rise to the occasion. And maybe this will prompt people to think about their savings account. I know it will me. I know it's motivated me to say, right. You know, it'd be really great to have.
I have an emergency fund. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if I was home right now, I'd be real nervous.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I'd be much more nervous than I am here, because here we're still working and all of that. But I'd be nervous. So I think, except for the people that are actually losing family members and are experiencing the worst of this scenario, I think all in all, it's only going to make everybody a little stronger and a little smarter.
Sure. Well, I mean, I heard one preacher talk about, you know, having this be a time to reset and reprioritize. And then another thing that, you know, I think of, like, where does your identity come from? You know, I heard a friend say how it seems like they're getting hit over and over again as things get worse economically, and they're used to being successful.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of like, oh, we can't, you know, get around this, or it's not, you know, it just keeps coming, you know, the one bad news after the next. And it made me think of, you know, when I'm paddling out mm-hmm. at the north end of Wrightsville Beach, we have that big inlet. And when the tide's coming in and there's a good wave, it's like you're on a treadmill and you're just paddling and paddling and you're not getting anywhere. And then the waves come, like as you're starting to just little bit by little bit get out, then the wave comes in a set, you know, there's a set of waves. And so, boom, that's another hit, another knocks you back. And so the closings, the news, the lack of meeting together, lack of church, the lack of doing what you love, loss of money, the virus itself, these are all waves pushing you back and keeping you from where you want to be. And unlike in the water, where you can make it to the outside, if, you know, even if you just paddle over a little ways, then you can get to the outside where it's not as much of a treadmill. Or if you're swimming and you're caught in a riptide, it's kind of like you have to go against what your mind says. Your mind says, keep paddling towards the shore. Just go, go, go.
Because you panic. You panic, yeah.
Yeah, and you die.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, if you can keep your mind about you, your wits about you, and you know what to do in a riptide, which is swim parallel to shore till you are out of the riptide.
That's a perfect illustration, Laurel, because, you know, you think about your friend that's struggling financially and really worried about it. It might seem counterintuitive, but instead of trying to work harder and trying to push and make it happen maybe a little shift in perspective, which is might be counterintuitive, but a little shift in perspective and maybe selling a couple of things so you're not trying to maintain so much. Maybe that's exactly what the doctor ordered. Maybe that's swimming parallel to the shore until the tide can bring you back in.
Yeah. Or here's the other thing I thought of, and this is maybe a segue into the Devo, but I think the cure, you know, for the fear and the panic is not looking to yourself and your own circumstances, but looking outside yourself to God.
I mean, looking up. It is a perfect segue, and we should do the Devo, but I want to also say in these situations and anytime outside of the coronavirus, when we're just feeling like, oh, here comes a little low point, I always think of the Apostle Paul, because he tells us exactly what to do in these circumstances. He tells us to welcome, you know, these kinds of trials, because all it does is fortify our faith and give us a better opportunity to be, you know, the kind of people we're supposed to be.
Right. Right. Well, that's basically what we're talking about is, you know, getting a different perspective and not hanging all our hats on our career or our productiveness or our image or our what our circumstances look like.
Right. Are you going to go to the Devo now? Is that it? Are we there?
Yeah.
All right. I'm excited.
Well, today I'm going to do something different. I'm going to read a Devo that was done by someone else. It's one of these daily devotionals that I like to use. That's how I kind of stay in a groove of having a daily devotion. And I'll use a daily devotion Devo. And this one's by Paul David Tripp. And it was actually from March 16th, but I thought this one was really relevant. So he's going to read a little bit from Psalm 4. So I'm going to read it.
Okay.
Answer me when I call, God of my righteousness. You have given me relief when I was in distress. Be gracious to me and hear my prayer. Oh, men, how long shall my honor be turned into shame? How long will you love vain words and seek after lies? Then know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. Be angry and do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts, on your beds, and be silent. Offer right sacrifices and put your trust in the Lord. There are many who say, who will show us some good? Lift up the light of your face upon us, O Lord. You have put more joy in my heart than they have when their grain and wine abound. In peace, I will both lie down and sleep, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. So that's a little bit from Psalm 4. That was pretty good, huh?
Yeah, I love how it's very direct about laying your own bed and ponder, because that's where everybody is right now.
Right. We're quarantined in our own beds.
In isolation.
Some silence, right? Which, you know, turn that TV off. Turn off the news. So this is what David, the author, says. And, well, actually, David is the author. King David was the author of Psalm 4, but I will say Mr. Tripp was the guy that wrote this Devo.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, there we go. So these words were penned by David, King David, in one of the most heartbreaking moments of his life. He's hiding out in the cave with a band of faithful men because his son is out to take his throne. And in a monarchy, the only way to securely take a throne is by ending the life of the person who's on the throne. Imagine where your thoughts would go, where your emotions would be, where your heart would run in a situation like this. Is David content? Of course not. It appears that little good can come out of this moment in his life. Yet in his grief and discontent, he knows remarkable peace. He even talks about his heart being filled with joy. Why? Because at the deepest of levels, neither his peace nor his joy is based on the circumstances, but on the God who rules the circumstances. If David's security is in God and God alone, then he has as much security in that cave as he does in the palace, because it is the God alone who makes him dwell in safety. There is no doubt in David's words. What will it be for you today? The discontent of doubt and fear, or the contentment of peace and rest? It is only grace that can deliver us from fear and give our hearts rest, even when we're in the cave once again.
And you think, not only do people define themselves by their money or status or things like that, but a lot of times by their family. I mean, if I think one of the worst things that could happen would be to be separated from Ani or Cape, you know, or have them wanting to kill me so that they could take the throne, that does seem like a fairly destitute situation. Mm-hmm. That would rock the very core of who I am as a mother. So I can relate to that. I mean, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't. They're not trying to kill me.
Right. But I mean, if you're thinking about, I like how he describes, so David, King David, was actually in a cave. Mm-hmm. But the author, Mr. Tripp, was saying, you know, the cave of fear and doubt. Because doesn't it, it's dark. When you're in a fearful, panicked mode, it's like you're in the dark. It's like you're in a cave where, you know, it's dank and, you know, there's no, this hopelessness. Whereas when we're in Christ, we're not hopeless. And I would encourage, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and one thing I think it's important to clarify is for people that aren't, you know, in the Word so much, or maybe not even believers that are listening, this doesn't mean that David's in the cave thinking that God is going to miraculously screw a light bulb in and throw him a steak dinner and everything's going to be okay. It doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that because he has this faith and because he has peace, that it's because he believes without a doubt that God's going to rescue him from his situation. It's just that he knows that God is there despite the circumstances. He's there, you know, if his son ends up killing him, he knows that that's still not the worst thing, because he will be reunited with God, or he will be with God, or whatever it is. I just want to throw that out there, because some people might be a little angry right now that God's letting their family die, or that, you know, why isn't God interceding in this situation? Or people are already confused about the role of God in these crises. And it might keep them from faith, thinking, waiting for them to just be miraculously rescued, when that's not how rescue comes a lot of times. Sometimes, sure. Not all the time.
Mm-hmm. Nope. But I think it is helpful to know that that's why trust and faith is not an easy thing, because I trust God when my life's going well, but I also trust God when my life's gone, you know, to hell in a handbasket. Like, just because, you know, say when my mom, when she had my little brother who has a brain injury and has disabilities, but trusting that no matter what, that God loved him and her, loved our family, and that this is not a curse from God.
No, he doesn't send curses like that.
No, he satisfied all that with Jesus. Mm-hmm. All the anger and curse that was what we would deserve was on Christ.
Yeah.
So this is not punishment from God. Mm-mm. And God is helping us in tangible ways and intangible ways. And, you know, I would encourage each person, if they have a relationship or if they don't have a relationship, ask God, like, if you are God and I believe you are good. So because I believe you are a good God, who do you want to be for me during this time? I'm afraid. I'm discontent. I'm scared about my job, or what's next for us. Guide me. give me wisdom. And like, you know, maybe he, that's what he wants to be for you, is wisdom.
If people want to go deeper into that, what you just said about praying to God and asking, who do you want to be for me in this situation? They need to go to our website and read your blog. You just did a blog that kind of combines episodes 13 and 14, and you talk about that exact thing. So that's a good little plug for your last article.
For our, yeah, yeah. So yeah, definitely, if you haven't checked out our blog on our website, postsessionpodcast.com, go check it out. And I'd say all of the blog posts thus far are pretty encouraging. So do that. You want to go on into some homework, Ash?
Yes, I have homework for you. You want to hear it?
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks for that Devo, by the way. Homework, don't get the coronavirus, number one. And check. Number two, I'm going to need you to sneak out there and enjoy a surf session and risk imprisonment. Because
sneak,
I'm afraid,
out to the beach, huh?
I'm afraid what this whole situation is going to do to my little buddy's brain if she doesn't get out there. So I need
I will say T.O. Tony has made efforts to contact the Wrightsville Beach to police to kind of see what the max imprisonment will be, because we need to know, is it worth it?
First of all, there's not going to be any imprisonment. It's totally going to be worth it. They're just going to ask you to leave and you're going to say, oh, okay. Oh,
wait, you mean we can't be here? You
Whoops.
Mean play dumb?
Yep. Sometimes it's the best course of action. I'm not saying breaking the law is okay, but I'm sure at this point that the beach closure is more of a suggestion than a law.
We'll see.
We shall see.
I'll let you know.
I can't wait to see. We'll post it. We'll post the what happens on social media.
All right. That sounds good. We're going to have a remote recording from jail.
I'm going to need to make my one phone call so I can record this podcast.
Exactly. Do we have Wi-Fi here?
Yeah. Yeah, you know they do. What's my homework? Do I have any?
Oh, well, number one, enjoy the water. You have access to it. You're on the water. Y'all are swimming. So enjoy it. Don't take it for granted.
I will not take it for granted.
And number two, don't get the coronavirus.
Okay, well, that sounds easy enough. We'll see. No, that's exactly what I'm going to do. Actually, what we're going to do this evening when it gets dark is go back out to that tarpon hole, and we're going to get some nighttime photos of the tarpon. And that's going to be really fun. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Definitely post that. And I was going to say, you mentioned, you got on in our notes, like, if you're homeschooling your kids, but are y'all doing that now?
Yeah, man, we're homeschooling. I actually put a few posts up about, hey, if you don't know what to do with your kids and you're homeschooling or you're quarantined or whatever you're doing, check this out. And I just showed a few pictures of some of the things we're doing, but not the stuff like textbook work and all that. We're reading a lot. The kids love to read. I love to read. So we're reading. But Ren's teaching them how to make coconut palm hats. And he had to pull apart a carburetor one day. So he taught them how the parts of the carburetor and stuff. And we're just getting them in the water and trying to do some real practical things with them every day. Today we're going to make pizza dough using my Nani's recipe, and get jealous because I'm about to drop this on you. We're going to take half the dough and make pizzas, but the other half we're going to make something called, that my Nani called, pizza frite, which is basically like a donut. You take the pizza dough, you fry it up, you shake it in a bag with some sugar, and we're going to have little homemade donuts.
Oh my God. Gosh, when are y'all coming home?
It'll give us something to look forward to, won't it? Write it down on our list of things to do when we're reunited.
Yeah, that sounds good. All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening. Please comment on our website or wherever you listen to Post Session Podcast. Another way to stay in touch is go to our Instagram page and our Facebook pages. We are always posting pictures and chit-chatting with our peeps. Thank you so much for listening.
Laurel does a great job with our Instagram stuff, so definitely check that out. Okay, thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.